I saw you. So the theme of the teaching we've been learning this week, we are embarking on a 9-year course, right? It's a record of a teaching that was given in Tibet about 100 years ago. And my teacher taught me this several times over a 30-year period. And then we haven't actually reached the record of the teaching yet, We've just reached the part where the Lama, who gave the teaching in Tibet, was asking his listeners, why did you come here? Okay? He's starting off on 24 days of teaching. Their teaching is not like our teaching, okay? You're talking 12 hours a day, very few breaks. It requires a big kidney and lots of teeth. So he hasn't gotten to the first day of teaching yet. He's just asking us to check, why did we come? Okay? Why did we come to the teaching? And what I would like is if this week each of us learns how to ask ourselves before we do anything, why am I doing this? You know, why am I here? Why am I doing this particular thing? Okay? It's not just before a 9-year teaching. It can also be before you get in your car in the morning to go to work, or before you have a conversation with someone. Could be before you come home and ask yourself why. You know, what do I want out of the next few hours? You know, why am I doing the thing I'm about to do? And the whole meditation and the whole practice this week has been aimed at learning that skill of when you start something new, even if it's like eating a meal. I went to a restaurant today, okay, and I ate a meal. And then before the waiter comes with the food, you always have a small wait, right? Some restaurants more than others. And you can ask yourself, you know, why did I come here? You know, what did I want to happen here? Why did I come here? And I've been practicing it the same as you have this week, more than usual, right? And this morning I was about to do something and I said, oh, I'm supposed to ask myself, why am I doing this, you know? And I checked my mind deeply, you know, and my mind said, I just want to. You know, and I said, is that it? You know, you don't have any deeper spiritual reason to do it? No, I just want to do it right now. And then I thought, oh my God, that's probably the usual answer. I think to check why you do something, it requires great honesty. And if you even once catch yourself saying, just because I want to, you know, then you become aware of how little you are helpful to others. You see? Because if the answer is always, just because I want to, there's no sense of responsibility for others' happiness, or I'm doing this to better prepare myself to serve others, or I'm doing this for my friend or my family, or, you know, I'm afraid, having just discovered that voice in myself, that for many of us, it's no more than that. You know? Like, it's no more than, I feel like it right now. And when you don't get what you want right now, then you get cranky. Everyone has to put up with you, you know. So in this tradition, in this system of meditation, it's very, very beautiful. It's very, very subtle. You see, you don't sit down and say, why did I come to this teaching tonight? And if you hear the voice say, just because I felt like it, you know. If you hear that voice, in this system, in this meditation system, you're not supposed to fight. You're not supposed to struggle and correct, you know. It's not like someone's correcting you in a boarding school or something and hitting you on the ruler and saying, bad motivation. You know, you should be doing this for other people, you know. In this beautiful system, you don't fight your natural motivation. Say, you just discuss with your mind. By the way, I had an idea. So I had a very inspirational night last night. And I was thinking of what to teach on the weekend teachings here. So we're going to start weekend teachings once a month in Phoenix, right? So on months that we don't have the 10 days, on most months, we will try to do a weekend teaching. And I was thinking, what would be useful for people, you know? And then you are a difficult crowd to please. Because there are some people here who have been coming for 20 years. And there's some people here who have been coming for 2 days. You know, and I have to entertain everybody. So if I was thinking, what would make the older students happy, you know? And then what could the new people relate to and benefit from, you know, and not feel overwhelmed? And then I thought of this beautiful text. It really, really came strong to me. It's called, what's it called? Say, Dangzin.
Dangzin.
Shangdep.
Shangdep.
Dangzin.
Dangzin.
Shangdep.
Shangdep.
It's by the, His Holiness the First Panchen Lama, who also wrote Delam in the 1600s, okay? And it's a debate between the devil and an angel in one person's mind. Yeah, it's very beautiful. It's very, very beautiful. So, you get, you know? One little guy up there on the pitchfork, and you get one angel, you know? And in the person's own mind, the whole book is his own mind. The First Panchen Lama, who was maybe one of the greatest poets of Tibet. Incredible poets. The whole thing is this beautiful, lyrical, what do you call it? Very, very moving and very compelling argument. The devil is no fool. The devil is not a fool, you know. And he, you know, the guy who's talking, the speaker of the book, he's like, so one day I sat down to meditate and suddenly, you know, I was going to meditate on emptiness, you know. And then this voice came in my head. And then the devil said, you know, just think black. You know, just think nothing matters, you know? That's emptiness profound. You know? And then he's like, yeah, that sounds good, you know? And then this other voice comes in and says, no, no, no. You know? You'll like it. You'll like the book. It's very, very, it's one of the greatest pieces of literature ever written. And I think it would be nice to translate it. It's really beautiful because towards the end they get very, very subtle. You know, the devil is making very devilish arguments, very subtle arguments about emptiness mostly. Little wrong ideas about emptiness. And then he's corrected by the angel. It's a very sweet. So I thought for the more advanced students, you would hear subtle arguments about emptiness that you haven't heard yet. And wanting to learn a nearly infinite variety of arguments, you can pick up some more. And then the newer students, it's just a very entertaining and beautiful text. And you can learn a lot about emptiness quickly. So let's do that, okay? We'll do that. It's really beautiful. And we'll stream it, okay, Jiggy? We'll stream it live. So if you're in a village like New York, you can still listen to it. Okay. So, inside your mind, when you start to look at why you came here, it requires great honesty, right? To hear. There's going to be three or four voices in your mind. Some of them will be noble and some of them will be base, right? Some will say, I just want to be here. Chelsea's coming. Chelsea's coming, you know. Maybe we can talk, you know, like that. And then some other state of mind will say, actually, I didn't want to go, but, you know, my wife made me go, you know, or something like that. And then there'll be, and the author says, don't fight with your mind. He says, don't struggle against your mind. Don't say, no, 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 you're a bad mind. Okay? He said, just talk to your mind. That's where I got on the subject, right? Talk to your mind. So, you're coming here to see Chelsea. Yeah. Okay. How many times do you think you might be able to see her in the next year? Well, I don't know. They're doing the finished teachings a couple of times. They're doing the Prescott thing. Maybe I'll see her three or four times. Okay, then what about next year? I don't know. Geshe La Sede would be going for 9 years. I could probably see her a couple of times. You know, and then what's going to happen after the 9 years? And then you're like, oh, that's pretty far ahead. And then you're like, well, where were you 9 years ago? And you say, I don't know. I was with my friend. Then you can't remember their name, right? It's really embarrassing. Like at the time they were extremely important in your life. You're like, I was with my friend, you know, and you're like, who was that? Oh, and I was having problems with the big lady, but I don't remember her name. That happened to me the other day, right? The one we had such a desperate problem with. I was like, what's her name? You know, and I couldn't remember, you know, and then didn't talk to your mind, say, maybe you won't remember Chelsea in 9 years. What? Maybe you won't even remember. And how many times can you attend a 9-year teaching? Well, I'll be, well, how old? You know, what if he does two of those? Oh, well then I'll be the same age as, yeah, you will, you know. And then what will be the last teaching you go to? And what will be the last time you see Chelsea? You see, you're not fighting with your mind, you're just asking. If the mind gets upset, just say, I'm just asking. So, what's the last time you see Chelsea? I don't know. Well, but everybody sees somebody for the last time, you know that. Well, I know, but I didn't. Well, please think. What will it be like? You know? And then there'll be the last time you go to work, the last day you go to work. I had my last day at work. 15 years commuting, 4 hours each way. 4 hours back, up and back. You know, I got a 10-point diamond. That's 1/10 of a carat. You know, that was the reward for 15 years of service. You know, and the funny thing was I had to approve the bill. And it was a cheap one. That's it. You're out of the building. They take your ID, your swipe card, and then you're on your own, you know. And then you go to the hospital the last time, and then ask your mind, well, what will happen after that? And then the mind doesn't want to go there. The mind is very resistant to thinking about that. It's like a dark night, right? It's like a dark night. I mean, I will be in the hospital, I will stop breathing, the machine will go beep, 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 the nurses will come in and shrug. Well, then what? You know? And then, most people, then they draw a blank. They say, I don't know. You know? I mean, some people say something happens, some people say it doesn't. We don't know. Every human mind, that hasn't been trained well, when they reach the logical discussion with their own mind about the last moment, and you say, well, what then? And then literally, I don't know about you, but for me, literally, I see some kind of black or some kind of darkness. Like, I don't know what. According to this philosophy, you have gone through that countless times. And so deep down you know. You know, there's a deep, deep shock of the being. And then there's a fierce darkness. And then there's a chaos, you know. And then there are terrible experiences. The mind, all the seeds in the mind that you collected in this life, every tiny negative word projects like a tsunami in front of you, a new world, you see? A chaotic, unpredictably violent world. And then you pass into it. You send it forth in front of you, and then you walk into it, you see? And then if you are a well-trained person, then you know that that's true. And it connects with something deep inside. You've been through that countless times. Something deep inside you says, yeah, I've been there. And it's frightening, and your mind wants to not think about it, right? But if you've been trained, if you've had some training, then you know that that you can control that process. If you are well trained, and if you work hard, if you are disciplined, then what happens to you after the moment of death can be controlled to a great extent. You can assure that nothing bad will happen. You can do that. With training, you can do that. What is the principal training to do that? What do you need to know to be armed for the moment of your death, which could come tonight on Highway 60 West, right? What do you need to be best prepared? And they say, know where your world is coming from. Just know. Just appreciate where your world is coming from. Okay? Like what? Like the most irritating person in your life this week. Just try to grasp that they are coming from you. They are an exact reflection of how you've been acting for the last few months. Okay? The most irritating person in your life, the person who frustrates you, the person that you can't get along with, everything they say, everything they do, all their mannerisms, all their habits, everything about them is an exact mirror of how you've been acting yourself for the last few weeks. Okay? And then you pause, you know, it causes you some pause. Just thinking about that destroys the negative seeds that would cause you to pass into a dark world when you die. Okay? So a person who understands, who's had some training, they can take care of what happens to them after they die now. They can assure that certain things don't happen. And they can assure that other things happen. And it's not difficult. You see, you don't have to be a good person. You just have to know what's happening. Which is what it means to be a really good person. Because you can't complain anymore about other people once you realize that they are a perfect reflection of yourself. You can't wholeheartedly complain. You can half-heartedly complain. Probably you do. Right? But you can't put your heart into it. Once you know they're coming from you, you cut them some slack. And just knowing prevents you from having a very terrible experience after you die. And if you keep that kind of thinking up, then when you die, you go to paradise. You go to heaven. Which thinking can be summarized in the words, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's the same thing. Okay? The more you grasp that, the more the mind projects a better world after you die. Okay? Then we were talking about, suppose you are a person who figured that out. You figured out that how to sort of guarantee that nothing bad is going to happen when you die. How to guarantee the process. Suppose you figured it out, right? Pretty well. And you've taken care of the seeds in your mind that will ripen after you die. Right? Then that question came up. We're still talking to your mind, right? You just sat down to take a teaching or to brush your teeth. Right? The mind said what?
Why?
What did the mind answer? I want to talk to Chelsea. All we were doing was talking to Chelsea, okay? And we went all the way to your death and beyond. Okay? You're still talking to your mind who came to the teaching to see Chelsea. That's all, right? Don't forget where we are. And then you're still talking to your mind, you see, and you say, well, if you knew how to take care of yourself after you die, wouldn't it be unkind to help others also take care of their death? If you knew how. If you really understood what was going to happen, if you really knew how to take care of it, wouldn't it be unkind not to share that with people if they were interested, okay? We're not allowed to proselytize. We can't go door to door and knock and say, you have to believe, you know, this. You know, we're not allowed to do that. But if someone's interested and someone wants to know, and they say, you know, my auntie died and last week and it concerns me, I want to know what happened to her and I want to know what would happen to me, then the time is open. The time is, they ask you, what do you know? And then you start explaining, right? And this book was saying, wouldn't it be cruel if you refused? Wouldn't it be cruel to refuse to share what you knew? If someone were afraid and facing that death, you see what I mean? Wouldn't it be a cruel thing to not share if they asked, if they were interested? Right? Then you circle your mind back to Thursday night in the Unity Church of Mesa, and you say, why did you come here? And they say, whoa, well, now it's a little bit bigger, you know? And you say, do you still want to talk to Chelsea? And they're like, yeah, I do. But now it's a bigger thing. I mean, I'm still going to talk to Chelsea. But now maybe the interaction will be different. And maybe we together will do something different. You see, I mean, like maybe I could, I'm still going to talk to Chelsea because it's fun. And fun is a good thing. Companionship is a good thing. But now when I talk to her, maybe we can sort of plan how to share this with, you know, see what I mean? You would try to make the motivation. And I don't think you would, we're not in the business of shutting down all your fun. Like, don't talk to Chelsea. You know? Go pray in the corner. You know? And it's not like that. It's like, now talk to Chelsea with those things on your mind. And it'll be sweeter. The talk will be sweeter. And the whole experience will be sweeter. And then you sort of take more joy in what you're doing, you see? If you go, by the way, this whole process is supposed to take 30 seconds when you get good at it. You're about to go to dinner with somebody, and you say, why are you going? You know, like you're trying to get your necklace on, or you're halfway through brushing your teeth, and then you're supposed to, why are you going? And you're like, and then you're supposed to have this little conversation in your head. And then you spit, and you wash out your mouth, and you go to dinner. You see? It's not like you do something different. You just sweeten your heart for going out to dinner. And then the whole experience becomes holy, okay? The whole experience becomes something sacred. So, he was suggesting that you may even want to take your mind ahead to the end of your spiritual path. Like, okay, if you talk to Chelsea, what's going to happen 3,000 years later? You know, I don't know. And it's like, I would like to become like Jesus or something. You know, I would like to be a person like that. I would like to be a being who comes to a planet and becomes a source of comfort for every being on that planet. That would be nice. I'm going to talk to Chelsea and become a being who can go to a whole planet and take care of everybody. Like Super Spider-Man. Okay? And he said, that's okay, that's nice. He said, but are you capable? Could you do it? And we were talking that the human mind can do it. Okay? The human mind can be perfected. It's possible. The human mind can enter a godlike state. You can know all things in the future. You can help all beings on a planet and many billions of planets. You can stand with your teacher above one planet or billions of planets together, stand above the planet and help every being there. You can do it. Your mind has that capacity. It is blocked from that capacity. It's currently capable of that, but there are some blocks in the mind. Your mind is not in its natural condition right now, and your body is not in its natural condition. The nature of your body is light, like an angel, and it's blocked. There's something blocking it. And we just remove those, and then we are back to who we were. Okay. So he asked the question. Now we got to the text. Okay. He asked the question, can you do it? Is it possible to become a being of light who helps all creatures? Is it possible for us? Wala Deitabu Sanje Gikopa De Rangi Tok Nipa Dukam Minduk. Say Dukam
Minduk.
Dukam Minduk. Duk means I can. Ka means or Minduk. Which means what?
Can.
I can. So he says, can you or can you? Okay? Become an enlightened being. Is it possible or is it not possible? Dukam Minduk China. They knew. You can. He answers like, he just says, no, you can. Now he's going to prove it. Dejupe dengi nangne chok tu jupa ni, dengjoki den yin la. You have everything you need, okay? You live in a country where you are free to practice what you want, okay? No one's going to break into the door and arrest everybody. You know, I was listening to a radio interview on NPR in the car from Syria, and a 25-year-old girl called in, you know. And it was very beautiful because she could be anonymous. She was giving a live interview, but she could be anonymous. And they said, well, what do you guys want? You know, what's all the fuss about? She says, look, we just want to be free. We just want to do what we like. That peaceful and nonviolent, not criminal. But we just want to be able to do what we want in our own home without having someone kick the door down and arrest us and we disappear. That's all we want. That we don't want any big thing. We just want a little freedom. You know? And it was very beautiful. And we have it, right? No one's going to march in here and lock you up for what you're doing tonight. And no one cares, you know? They really don't care. You are totally free, right? You are young. You've been well educated. The education you already received in your public schooling surpasses the education that 99.999% of the world has historically ever received or ever receives now throughout the world. You are the most highly educated, among the most highly educated people in history. Before you started your adult life, you know, so you have everything. You have enough food. You can go anywhere you want, you know. I was on a highway in Beijing, you know, and they said, get off the highway, get off the highway. I'm like, what? And they said, just get off the highway. I'm like, okay, you know. And I said, what was wrong? And they said, we don't have a license for that highway. I said, what? And they said, we can't drive on that highway. We're from this suburb. We're from Glendale. We can't drive in Mesa. You have to go to the side streets. I'm like, you need a pass to drive on a highway in another suburb? They said, of course, it's on your license plate, you know. And you'll get arrested, you know. And I'm like, wow, you know. And we're not like that. You can drive any. If you want to go to Iowa tonight, you can. I don't know why you want to. And I'm not asking you to, okay? You can do anything. You can do anything. And only a fool cannot feed themselves in this country. Come on. I mean, you will eat. You're not going to starve in this country. And you can practice. If you want to practice all day, you can pretty much practice. Sign up for Diamond Mountain 3 Retreat. I guess you might not have to worry about your food money. Okay? You know, it's all taken care of. You know, you don't have to worry. You can do everything. So he says, and you've been trained. Okay? You have full access to spiritual training, whatever you want. You want to be a Zoroastrian, or you want to be a Buddhist. Or you have full access to whatever you want. Okay? But for the fact that you haven't worked hard enough, okay, you could have already achieved enlightenment in this lifetime. It's not that the instructions aren't there, or the teachers aren't there, or the food's not there, or the places are not there, or the car's not there. You have everything. You just didn't work hard enough. Okay? Then he defines what it is to have a perfect body to become an angel. Okay? What's the perfect body and mind? What's the best body and mind to turn into an angel with? Got it? Alright? This is cool. I like it. You want to be an angel made of light with big wings, okay? And fly all over and save, you know, blind guys. Anyway, doubling they mean you have a perfect, deep, perfect body. You have now. Doubling they mean to be born from a human woman's womb, okay, as opposed to an animal or something like that. Something happens to the chakras. Something happens to the inner body. Okay? To be born from a human woman's womb. When you are born from a human woman's womb, as opposed to an egg, or as opposed to, a chicken egg, or an animal birth, okay? There is something about a human woman's womb, which is sacred, and it has certain, it endows your body with certain deep spiritual elements. And if you are born in that manner, your body is eligible to turn into light in one lifetime. If you learn, if you train yourself properly, you can turn that kind of body into light in a single lifetime of work, of good work, okay? What kind of body is that? Kam Drup Den. Kam, say Kam. Drup
Den.
Kam means, in this context, Kam means a sacred element within the body. Okay? And Drup means six. And you have them. Okay? If you have those elements, your body is changeable into that of an angel. It's beautiful. It's a, what do you call it? We're now going to get an anatomical explanation of why you can become an angel. I'm not talking the mental part, okay? Just your physical body is fit, uniquely fit. No other physical body can do it except the kind of body you have if you have been born from a human woman's womb, okay? So, I took a section out of another text that I particularly love. Okay? And I thought you would like to hear. This is an explanation from another text about why your body is so uniquely fit. Okay? Mama Christie, I taught her this text long ago, and then she really liked it. And I helped her to translate it, and then she taught it once. It's Yangchen Drupe Dorje. And it's a beautiful text. So here is, from his text, what it is that makes your body. I'm going off on a whole different subject, okay? Which is my privilege. Alright. There are things you can do with this body that cannot be done with any other form in the universe, you know. It's like your planet, you know. I saw a beautiful little 45-minute piece on the Hubble telescope, and you know, they looked billions of light years out. Okay? That telescope is able to go billions of light years out, and they never found a planet like that. It hasn't been found yet. This is unique. Something unique about this planet. And something unique about your body. Your body is unique among the billions of forms there are. Your body is unique. You can change in one lifetime into an angel. Why? A person who is capable of becoming enlightened within a single lifetime has to have a certain energy in their body. Okay? There must be a certain energy within their body. Something, and you can come to, they must possess the six elements. They must have an extraordinary capacity of intelligence. Okay? And spiritual intelligence is not like scholarly intelligence. Okay. Spiritual intelligence means you can take what many people might take as an ordinary event and transform it into a divine meeting. You see what I mean? So like you turn on the Wizard of Oz on television and suddenly you are transported into a discussion between some divine beings. Like You sit in a room and watch the Wizard of Oz on TV, and you're getting all these spiritual messages. And then, or you go to a movie, you know, and the people around you are just like scarfing popcorn, you know. And then you're getting this, oh my God, this movie is about my life, you know. It's about the last 41 years of my life, you know. Oh, and look at the ending. Oh, it's perfect, you know. And then you feel like, oh God, everything's going to work out, you know. No matter how conflicted I feel right now, or how much I struggle right now, I got a message from this movie, you know. And it ended with this unexpected twist, and it's a sign from God that this is how things are going to work out. Okay? A person of high spiritual capacity believes that it's a sign. They believe that it's a sign. They understand that it can be a sign. God's not like, what do you call it? Incompetent. He can pull off weird stuff. You know? It's not a big deal to switch the ending of a movie that you walk into. You know? Okay? Like, you swear to all your friends it's such a great movie, and then they go see it, and it's like, it has a different ending. You know? And they're like, I don't know why you're so excited about the movie, you know? It's not such a hard thing. It's not a strange thing at all. Okay? That God would craft the ending of a movie for you. The one that you walk into. Okay? Only the one that you walk into. Okay? Is gonna be about your life. Okay? So a person of high spiritual IQ gets it. They get it. And when they go to a movie, when they ask themselves why you're going to a movie, there's some pretty cool answers going on. You know, like, I want a message for what to do in the next 6 years of my life. That's why I'm going to the movies tonight. Okay? Like that. And they have that capacity. Okay? He gives an example of what it means to have that capacity. Wangbo ni jorke dewa lam tu cheng nu. They can take the act of a relationship between a man and a woman and use it as a spiritual, what do you call it? Guidebook. Okay? The course of their relationship with another person becomes a guidebook for the evolution of their spiritual life. Okay? They might, for example, take the person they met to be an angel, okay, from heaven. And they're not foolish and they're not naive. They have the spiritual IQ to realize there are no accidents. Okay? There's a reason for everything. They say, why did you meet this person? Why did you meet this person at this place at this time when you were that many years old? And what was God trying to tell you? Okay? And a person of high spiritual IQ is like, yeah, you're right. That was something important. Something important happened. Okay? All right? So he takes the example of a relationship. Jengi Bishi Gopale. Kam koga mi, kam koma ni dang, de la keng ma shi dang, nyawa nam na wambo ni jor ki yawa me. He says, among the many kinds of life, the many forms of life, which you can see and which you cannot see. Forms of life you can see are like animals and other kinds of people in other countries. Those are the ones you can see, right? And then there are countless forms of life you cannot see. But among all those forms of life, on all those worlds, you are unique. No other form of life has the spiritual intelligence to interpret their relationship as a message from God. See? They're not capable. They can't think about it. Okay? They can't understand it. It won't come to them. Okay? Only a person who is born of a woman's womb, has some kind of elements in their body to grasp that the relationships they engage in their life may be messages of a divine being. Okay? Like that. He lists some of the parts of your body, if you care. There are nadis, okay? Nadis. The inner channels. Kamkarmar. And what we call the white and red elements. They are an energy which is the source of the egg of the woman and the sperm of the man. So it's not the physical menses and sperm, it's the energy which makes them grow. So inside your body is this really sort of very powerful, divine, creative energy. Okay? And you can use that energy. Okay? There are other forms of life which have relationships, right? Like animals. Okay? You can see that animals mate, right? They find a partner, like doves. I love the doves in Phoenix because you see one. I saw one out back here, and they were singing, you know, and you know the other one's nearby.
You know, and it's beautiful. You watch them and they sing. And then you're waiting, okay, where's the other one? And you listen, and then they answer from another tree. And then they always hop on the same limb together, and it's very beautiful, okay? They have interpersonal relationships, but they can't interpret them as something divine. They can't see that they may be something divine. They have their own innocent divinity, but they can't intellectually, or they can't consciously reflect on, oh, you know, she's cooing to me because I'm supposed to remember why, to wonder why I'm here today. Like that. It wouldn't occur to them, something like that. This is interesting. People who live in circumstances which are too good are not eligible to become angels. People whose circumstances are too smooth don't have an impetus to struggle to become divine. Okay? They can't. If you're too happy in the present world, it's a problem. And he gives examples. Some people are born crippled. Some people are born strong. Some people are born without food. Some people are born with too much food. Some people are born with, I was in Indonesia, we participated in some fundraisers for a children's hospice. Children who got AIDS when they were born. Children who came out with AIDS. There are people who are born with AIDS. And then there are people who live long lives, nearly free of illness, okay? And there's a huge disparity of happiness and suffering in this world. Some people are deeply, deeply depressed, sitting in a Starbucks. And then some people are deeply happy, faced with terrible circumstances. You see, the disparities in this life are fertile ground for spiritual striving. See? So he said, you're so lucky to be born of a woman and to be born into this world. Because there's so much disparity here that you will wonder, how can I make these people happy? Okay? You will struggle to make people happy. If you were born into some sort of like jolly realm, you wouldn't try hard. You would just sort of space out. It'd be like watching TV all day. Okay? And this kind of realm, with its bite, unexpected tragedy, is perfect realm for spiritual development. Okay? He says, you have inside you the right physical elements, and outside of you, you have the perfect kind of mixture of tragedy and happiness. And that's perfect. Okay? So with relation to yourself, you can wish that you could get out. And with relation to others, you could feel compassion. You know that in this tradition we say that your world is flowing from seeds in your mind, right? In this tradition, we say your world is flowing from seeds in your mind, okay? If you take special care to be extremely kind to others, that plants seeds in your mind that your own life runs very smoothly and successfully. Only in the human realm, only in the realm of those who have been born from the womb of a woman, do the seeds ripen fast enough to see that in a single life. Only in this realm, and only born of a woman's womb, can you consciously craft your future by being kind to others. You see? You can change course of history. You are capable in this kind of body of changing the course of history within a few years. You see? If you collect certain seeds, the world will go in one way. World history itself will go in one way. If you collect different seeds, world history itself will be altered. You possess a body and mind which is capable of altering the course of world history. Each person here has a body and a mind which contains within it elements that would allow you to change the course of history. You could make this planet a paradise if you wished. You have the power. Physically, you have the power in your body. Okay? It's very beautiful. Sachu, say Sachu.
Sachu.
Ne.
Ne.
Lung.
Lung.
Sa.
Sa.
Tigle.
Tigle.
Sa.
Sa.
Chu.
Chu.
Ne.
Ne.
Lung.
Lung.
Sa.
Sa.
Tigle.
Tigle.
How many?
Six.
Six. Six elements in your body. There are six forces in your body, which would allow you to alter the course of the world. It's very beautiful. Physically, you have the capacity to alter the course of this world. Okay? Each body. What are they? Sa. Sa means the... You have an energy in your body which would allow hardness, solidity. In the old days, they called it earth. The element of earth. I don't like the translation. Okay? Don't think of it as earth. You have within you a spiritual capacity to lend solidity to things which are not solid, such as water. And if you were at the correct spiritual level of training, you could walk on that object. You could turn it solid with your goodness. You have that capacity, it's built into your body. It's so beautiful, right? This is built into your body. The capacity to walk on air or to walk on water. You have that capacity. You just don't know how to use it. Say chu.
Chu.
Chu means the capacity to turn things liquid. The capacity to turn things into liquid. Say mei.
Mei.
Fire. The capacity to turn things into heat at will, such as a dead body. Power over the capacity of heat, such you may. Then lung, say lung. Which is that one? I'm not sure. Wind. The capacity to make animate those things which are inanimate. You have to understand what I'm saying. This capacity is built into your body because you were born of a mother from a human womb. And only because of, only those beings have this capacity. It's a kind of a magic that comes with being born from a human mother. Okay? By the way, this gets into higher reasons to be grateful to your mother. Okay? That only when you study, this is Tantra, okay? This is higher teaching. Only when you fully realize what she has given you can you honor her properly. Okay? She has given you, she has granted you the power to change this world. Literally. Okay? She has granted you the power to change the history of this world yourself. Okay? By yourself. It's beautiful. It's really beautiful. Such a thing. Say, ta. Ta means the channels of your body, the inner channels, like the chakras of your body. She gave you this, she gave you the, what do you call it? Like a lattice work or a... She gave you the...
Framework.
The physical framework of your inner body. Okay. It's like a new skeleton. You have a super skeleton inside of you. You have a framework of inner channels upon which can rest the body of an angel. You see? You already possess the innards of an angel. Okay? She gave them to you. Okay? You have a spiritual body below your physical body, which is the only kind of subtle physical body that can support the body of an angel. You already have that inner skeleton, a spiritual skeleton, which can support an angelic body. You already have it. You see? It's very miraculous, okay? Last one called Tigle. Tigle. Bindu in Sanskrit. She gave you subtle centers of awareness in your body called drops, right? Which are called drops. And if you have those six parts inside you, you can shuffle. You can cast off the physical body and take on a spiritual, an angelic body. You have the inner hard wiring. You are already fit to wear an angel's body inside. Okay? You just have to learn how to change the outside. The inside is set. Your mother gave it to you. You have it. It's so beautiful, right? It's so amazing. Okay. Come to the Denshin Wombo. And then he goes back to the example of a partner, of a spiritual partner, to meet a man or a woman who can help you become aware of that body, the inner one, is also a great blessing. Last thing, okay, then we'll take a break. Okay? Last thing. The reason that over the course of history, people have depicted angels as being humanoid. Okay? Mostly two arms, two legs. You know? Still have shoulders, chest, face, ears. Okay? The reason that throughout history, angels have most often been depicted in human-like forms is because that's how they look. Because it's on a human... It's on the inner framework of a human that an angel is built. Okay? That's any time you meet with an angel, or you come to meet an angel, right? They will generally have a human form. Like they won't have 2.5 arms or 3 heads normally. Okay? They will look human. They will look very, godlike, right? Like divine, like a goddess. Like a really beautiful goddess, right? They will be recognizable to you because they are built on the same thing that you're built on. They are built upon the same framework as you are. Okay, it's very beautiful. So to answer, what was the question they asked just now in the text? Could I do it? Could I do it? And he's like, could you do it? You know, you don't understand what you got. You know, you don't understand who you are. You don't understand what your mother gave you. You know, could you do it? You know, he's like, all right? It's very beautiful, right? You're very close. Okay? Just, you're already so close. Okay? That's all. So we'll take a break. And, is there a bake sale thing?
Yes.
Yeah? There's a bake sale. If you haven't been here before, we sell cookies for outrageous prices.
Like return.
Okay, questions. Go for it. Yeah. Anybody have a microphone?
I had a question about, you start in on this path in the practice, and you experience all these changes happening. You're getting happier, and there's pranas, different energies running in your body. And another one that I've been experiencing is like an impulse to create, to express.
I'm sorry, you gotta do that part over.
Just that through the practice, there seems to be like an openness to expression and a desire to create through like dance or writing or music. And so I'm wondering if the scriptures talk about art as a form of spiritual practice. And also if you had personal advices for someone that was so inclined.
Yeah. So I'll just summarize the question. When you start, by the way, we won't go on very long, maybe 10 more minutes or something, 10, 15 minutes. It seems to be that when you start working on your seeds, that you get some pretty immediate reactions. And then one very common, I think, you're just becoming happier, basically. You're becoming a happier person, right? And then it seems like that kind of opens up creativity, a sense of creativity that may not have been part of your life before. Maybe it was, but now it's, I call it popcorn. It's like, pop, 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 and you can't stop it, you know? It's kind of fun. So, is that a common phenomenon? Yes. And basically, you're just getting happier. So it's a function of an increased level of happiness, right? And then there's a desire to express that happiness. And it could be with poetry, it could be in art, it could be with music. And that's normal. And then is that somehow, what do you call it? Recorded in the sacred literature, or you know, do they address that, and what can you do with that? Right. So they do. I read a beautiful text by. We went to Mongolia. I forget what year. Rob was there. 97. Huh. 98. And we found the last surviving dance master of Mongolia, because they had been communists for exactly 50 years. So he was 21 when communism fell. I mean, when communism started, and they weren't allowed to dance. And then they danced secretly for 50 years. And then he got to be an old man. By the time the communist regime fell, he was old. He was already in a wheelchair. But he's remembered. He was the last living person who remembered the dancing. And we studied with him. And from his wheelchair, he directed us and he taught us. And then he pulled out all these rare books. And he said, read this, you know, about when you get the urge to dance that you never felt in your life. You never had any urge to dance in your whole life. And you were the klutz of your elementary school. Like, the worst physically capable person. And then suddenly you have these inexplicable urges to dance. You know, he says, here, this will explain it to you. And I took the book and I turned around and he said, wait. He said, cannot take out of the yurt. You know, he lived in a yurt town, you know. Cannot take out of the yurt, you know. And there were like four or five of us. I think Lama Ora might have been there. Were you there? Yeah, she was there. And we sat... He forced us to sit in this smoke-filled yurt, and we had to come back every day and read the book on dance. And it was so beautiful, you know. And the main thing it said, it was in Tibetan, and the main thing it said was, as you become happier, as your seeds are purified in your heart, as you begin to feel more and more joy, then dance. Go ahead and express the new desires you have for creative things. Be happy, and then try to consciously develop them higher. So don't just ride them. You know, you'll get urges to dance, or urges to write poetry, or urges to grow new flowers. And don't just submit to them, but consciously develop them further. So devote yourself some time to developing them further. And then he told us, you know, as that creative urge comes upon you, there are two things you need to do. He was very insistent that there were two things we had to do. And I said, what? You know, and he said, first one, whenever you dance or write a poem or play a song because of this new spiritual urges that have come on to you, do it as an angel. Like, don't think you're a human. Okay? So I'm, you know, Raphael is writing a new poem. Gabriel is writing a new poem. Tara is about to write a new poem. And then imagine yourself as a holy creature, as a beautiful holy creature of light, and then write your poem as you reflect on that. Then the second thing was very beautiful. Whatever urges you get to create, offer it to your heart teacher. Offer everything to your heart teacher. It's all an offering to her, right? So him. Okay. So as you write the poem or as you sing the song, you know, we get nervous back there. You know, we're all like, what's the next note? I forgot the note. You know, what note you can start at? I have no idea. You know, you knew it yesterday. I knew it yesterday. You know? And then we come out, you know, but somehow, if in the worst moment of being nervous, if you just think, this is for my teacher, you know, then everything, every note is okay. And every poem is Shakespeare. As long as you can just think, this is for my, I lay it at my teacher's feet, who has saved my life. You know? And then everything's on pitch, even if it's not. Okay. Any other question? Yeah, okay, you haven't had one yet, I think.
Mama, you said that you called Tigle today subtle centers of awareness in your body.
Yeah.
I've heard you describe it as drops of consciousness.
Yeah.
Can you speak two parts about the relationship between Tigle and Lung, and also about how to access Lung when you're drops of consciousness are flipping out.
Okay.
So how to get to Tigle through Lung.
Do you mean Lung as a disease?
No.
As a disorder?
I mean Lung as prana.
Prana. Okay, good. Okay. Let me think for a second. This is the discussion of the inner body, how the inner body works. Okay, so there's prana. Prana means chi, or ki, or lung. And this is an energy which flows inside your inner body. Okay, it's an energy which flows inside your inner body. Okay, there are energies which lie below the circulatory system, and they lie below the endocrine system, and they lie below the digestive system. They are the source of the force of those systems. Okay? The bloodstream flows, the blood in the bloodstream flows due to these underlying energies, okay, called prana. Okay? And so there's another word, vayu. And you know, you guys know, but throughout your body runs prana. Okay? And then when your body needs to do something, all the prana will collect there and push together. Like if you're having a baby, okay, there's a thing called apana vayu, right? It's the downward pushing wind. Then when you're having a baby and you go into contractions, then all the prana of your body is concentrated there. Concentrations of prana we call vayu. And there are five vayus in the body. But this one, for example, pushes out. It's the same concentration of inner energy which allows you to defecate or to urinate or to ejaculate or to have menses. It's all an inner energy within your body that collects together and pushes, right? So try to imagine a place inside your body where those energies fall back on themselves. Okay? Try to imagine that, you know, where physical pranas double back on themselves and then again, until they become thought. Okay? So try to imagine an implosion of those energies, physical energies, which turns back on itself inward until it purifies into thought, the process of thought itself, which is not physical. Okay? And that's a tigne. Okay? So that's a drop of consciousness, right? And there's a practice called tigne chudu, the 16 steps of the drop. It's a meditation you can do where you purposely turn it back on itself, further and further in, until you reach a place of like crystalline consciousness, and then that can help you see emptiness. So there's it's called Kadam Tigle Chudu. It's a 16-step process within a single drop that was taught by the Kadampas. And it's very beautiful, and I've received that teaching, and maybe someday we can do it, okay? It's very beautiful. But then you can follow the prana to a vayu, turn it back on itself, go inner 16 steps to a inner place of direct perception emptiness. It's very within a single drop. It's very beautiful. I like that. So someday we can... Maybe that'd be good to do... while we're doing the debate of the angel and the devil, right? Okay, maybe we'll do that as the secret part of that. That'd be nice. Something like that. Very beautiful. Very. You can feel it, right? You can imagine it. Like turning inward 16 times until you reach some kind of essential state of mind. It's very beautiful. Okay, I think one more. Better be a good one. Yeah. Okay. No? Sure? That's my old friend, Reed Fossey, by the way. I'd like to welcome him. Yeah. I think we met each other at my teacher's house in 1978-ish or something?
No, it was more like... 89 or
90. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But we still go way back.
Okay.
Probably further than that.
All right. Okay.
But my question is, well, one, I haven't heard you talk for a long time since I, you know, lived in hell.
Yeah.
But so I appreciate your new style.
This is the 18th new style.
This is the 18th new style. Well, it fits you well.
Okay.
But my question is, well, like I appreciate, like, you know, devil and angel, but,
yeah,
you know, knowing enough about Buddhism, I know we really don't talk about angels and devils, but I think what you were talking about, for example, was like dachshund and self-grasping versus like yeshe or wisdom or
yeah,
wisdom mind or something to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and similar, well, I want to know what your translation of like angel is. Is it like bodhisattva, or is it Pamo and Paolo, Bhakta and Takini?
Okay.
And how to set the context of not overstepping an interpretation for like a Christian audience who would say, oh, he was wanting us to all become angels. Oh, only, you know, some Christian preachers would be like awfully mad at you at this point because they would say, you know, nobody can become angels. They, you know, angels are, they're in their realm, we're in ours. And, you know, it was Lucifer, the head of the angels at one time, that really got us in trouble because, like, he rebelled with God, etc., etc. So, please elaborate.
Okay, good. I think I struggled for a long time, right, with a word to describe a manifestation of an enlightened being, okay? So I know there's a sense in which angel, in the Christian tradition, there's a one sense of the word angel, which is a messenger of God, right? So in that feeling of the word angel, the messenger is sort of not as special as God. You know, they're just sort of people who carry messages. And they're not God. You see what I mean? They're like workers for God, or something like that. And they're not as special as God somehow. You see what I mean? I'm not talking about that kind of angel. Okay? When I say angel, it's a being who has, through their, ultimately through past practice, right? They say in Buddhism, they say that in the beginning everybody was like us, okay? In the world, in the universe, all beings were like us. All beings started like us, you know? And they had physical bodies that got old and died, and they had strife between them, and they were unhappy. And then some understood. And we say the whole process begins with understanding. So at some point in their life, they understood. And then what's the big understanding that they got? It was that the world is coming from how they treat other people, right? The world is produced by what we do to others. You see? And the entire world is produced by that. They understood that. And then their understanding of that got deeper and deeper until they were able to become angelic. So when I say angel, what I imagine in my mind, is you can say an enlightened being. Okay? They have power to appear in countless worlds in any form that would be helpful for someone else, right? They can take on, and they say hlundrup, say hlundrup. I love this word. You know, it's such an important word that many Tibetan monks are named hlundrup, right? You've probably known some hlundrups, right? Hlundrup means it is spontaneous, okay? When an angel takes on different forms to help different people, the process is spontaneous. There's no conscious thought. Okay? They just, the need, one person's need is enough to trigger an avatar of an angel to appear to them. You see? There's nothing more required for an angel to appear in the world than someone to have a need. And the process is automatic. There's no conscious thought on the angel's side. They just appear. In the perfect, in the absolutely most delicious, perfect form, mental and physical, to fit that person's needs, spiritual needs, and to guide them, you know. And there's no conscious thought on their part. It just happens. So Yeah, I just struggle with English. There's no word in English. I think angel is very close. I went through what you're talking about. You know, I went through wondering maybe it wasn't good to use the word angel, or maybe angel was kind of a strange word to use, or maybe it might upset other people. Or I went through many years of thinking about it, you know, but in the end, what you think of in Christianity as an angel is extremely close to what we would call an enlightened being. It's the closest thing, I think. Once you've studied it deeply, and once you've had special experiences with them, I think it would be comfortable for you to call them an angel. You know? And I'm sorry for all the Johnny Angel songs and stuff like that. But,
in Tibetan, though, would it be Trungpa?
Oh.
Or
Sangye.
Sangye.
How about Tuku? Okay, let's say Tuku. Because for me, it specifically refers to the ability to appear to countless people individually in the form that would most delight them and help them for their whole life.
Yeah.
Like that. Okay, that's a good place to stop. So I didn't cover a single thing on your homework. And you can sort of take another. I think you have a little bit left from an old homework or something, right? And well, don't stress too much. We'll finish the 10 classes by the end of the Prescott retreat. And that's the kind of the way it's been working out. And that's okay. So see you tomorrow at 9:30 for meditation, 10:30 for Niguma Yoga, and 11:30, Jenny Bill? Jenny Bill's coming 11:30. She's from LA. She's a delightful, very, very funny, very irreverent, extremely skilled yoga teacher. She's very gentle, she's very loving, an extremely good teacher. She can get you to do things that you didn't know you could do. And then what's the schedule after that? Oh, 2:30 is a special class for those who have empowerment. And then 5:15 and noon, you will have breakout groups at the Paradise Cafe. Okay, and that's been a lot of fun. We had one today. I went to a board meeting there today, and it was very pleasant. Nice place to hang out. And then we'll continue this class at 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Okay? I just wanted to ask, don't forget to make evaluation forms. That should be handed out on Saturday. Okay? I think the same kind that we used last time.